welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, since last we talked, Rex actually had emergency dental surgery. That happened on Monday, less than 24 hours after we recorded. Rex, we're now recording another podcast about a day and a half later. How are you feeling and what are you on?
I don't want to, what am I on? I don't want to overstate this because I believe that there are people in this world who are true lifesavers. And I would say anybody in the medical profession, anybody, first responders, my son is a first responder. Like those are the true heroes. Those are the ones I admire. Those are the ones I look up to. But I do not want to overstate this. Dr. Art Ryder, he's a lifesaver because I'm telling you, the last 3 days in Hilton Head were pretty tough. Couldn't eat, couldn't drink coffee. That was probably the hardest part. Had a bit of an issue with a back molar, and he got me right. And the funny thing was, he kept telling me what a good patient I was, and I'm not a good patient. I hate needles. I hate dentists. I hate going to hospitals. But if the alternative was, if I have to go through this hour of agony to get rid of the agony I'd been experiencing for 3 days, seemed like a fair trade.
If anyone has ever had a cracked tooth before, and I have as well, I actually had this replaced a couple of months ago. It is dire. It is terrible. Just the tooth sensitivity. Everything hurts. Throbbing pain. Glad you're on the mend. Although I do recommend keeping on the painkillers for at least a week or two.
No painkillers.
Brutal. Wow. My goodness. Just all natural.
Now,
the best patient.
He had to pump me full of so much, whatever it is they make you, they put in those shots. I didn't feel my face for 4 hours after I left there. I did the podcast, the golf podcast with our friend Jamie Weir from Sky Sports, and I kept trying to take a drink of water, and I kept
couldn't feel anything. Oh yeah,
it kept going down my. I kept having to apologize. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Well, you sound great now.
Thank you.
You look even better. Let's get into the golf news that we have at the midway point of this week, and it came out on Monday night, and that was what had really been rumored for months. Rex, became official on Monday with the PGA Tour confirming its plans to end the Hawaiian swing as we know it. Had been part of the PGA Tour schedule since 1965. No more Kapalua. The Century was canceled this year because of the severe water restrictions. That was actually the news from late last year that Century was not going to be played this year. Also, the Sony Open, which was already in its last year of its title sponsorship with Sony, the PGA Tour said could actually be shifted, reprioritized as a PGA Tour Champions event. So the Hawaiian swing, as we know it, as we have come to love it over the past couple of decades, is no more beginning in 2027. No surprise here, Rex. We've been talking about this for the past couple of months, particularly when the PGA Tour still kicked off its season in Hawaii in January. What do you think the trickle-down effect is moving forward?
I mean, the trickle-down effect in real terms is fewer playing opportunities. So if you're a PGA Tour player, you essentially just lost, I think, the field at the Sony Open was not 144 anymore, but still it was a full field. So whatever those are now, and those vary kind of from time to time based on daylight savings time. And Maui, I mean, I think Maui was a special place to start the year. I don't know how many players have told you that winning on the PGA Tour is always special, but it comes with so many perks. One of them is you get into the Masters, and one of them is you end up in Maui. It's such a great place to start the year. And I feel bad for our friend Mark Rolfing, for example, and a lot of other people that we know in the islands. But Rolf has poured his heart and soul into it. I think you and I both, you introduced him at the Golf Writers Dinner at Augusta just a few weeks ago for his work in Hawaii and for his work in bringing the PGA Tour event to Kapalua. I'm bummed for them. Like, I know how special this is. I know what this means to the community. I do all that. I say all that not to sound insensitive when I get to my final point, which is it made sense. If you're going to start trimming the schedule, and clearly Brian Rolapp intends to trim the schedule, how much is still up in the air? It is the obvious starting point. It was expensive to take the circus all the way over to Hawaii for 2 weeks. The viewership was never great. Our friend Doug Ferguson, the AP golf writer, pointed out on social media yesterday afternoon that all the hand-wringing and all the people who were saying how much they're going to miss the Hawaiian swing, where were you? You weren't there because the numbers never really justified what you were doing, even when they were getting good fields the last couple of years. You had a generation of players, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, who love starting the year in Maui. So it's not as though you weren't getting good fields. It just made sense. It's the place, it's the obvious place to start. I would say it was the low-hanging fruit. It's unfortunate for the community, but it seems obvious.
Yeah, I'll echo a lot of those sentiments. Certainly feel bad for our buddy Ralph, who has been fighting for the PGA Tour survival in Hawaii basically for the past decade. This is not the first time that those tournaments have been endangered. And I think in large part because of the work that he has done has sort of staved off the potential elimination there before it eventually became too late. I'm also disappointed, Rex, from the standpoint that of what we talked about on Sunday was that if you're the PGA Tour, and it's not necessarily even about the markets, but I argued that it should be about the golf courses and going to the best golf courses, iconic golf courses, recognizable golf courses, interesting golf courses. To me, that's the Plantation Course at Kapalua. And I think sort of on a smaller scale, it's Wailea as well. Old school Donald Ross gem, Seth Rainer gem, a lot of dog legs. Power's not necessarily a huge indicator of potential success there. It's just sort of a throwback in a lot of senses. And not having those two golf courses on the PGA Tour rotation, I think it just makes it worse overall as a product. Do I understand it from a business perspective? Absolutely. As you pointed out, the resources, the manpower, the expenses are exorbitant. And now in a new for-profit world, that has to come under the microscope. But just from a golf course product standpoint, it's going to be disappointing to not see the 400-yard drive. It's going to be disappointing to see, you know, the modern players who, with the modern equipment, can't really shape the ball all that well, having to work it in some of Wailea's tight quarters. So I think that's disappointing from that respect, particularly because I think the PGA Tour should be leaning in the direction of good and iconic courses. You bring up the viewership, and I think that's an important conversation as well. The Century brought in 461,000 viewers in 2025. This year's Sony Open, Rex, 106,000 average viewers. And I think as we sort of spin the conversation forward for what it means if you're lopping off those first two events of the PGA Tour schedule, even the American Express, which you'll remember was won by Scottie Scheffler and was also buoyed by the presence of Blades Brown, trying to become the youngest winner ever on the PGA Tour. Viewership numbers on average were just 617,000 on the weekend because of the NFL playoffs. And so you can cut out Hawaii, and you can do so for logistical reasons that I think almost everyone understands, but you still have the big elephant in the room that happens to be the Shield and sort of its overstretching dominance for the first month of the PGA Tour season.
And I don't think this is the end of it. I think I read a quote from Matt McNeely, and I won't read it again because that was painful, I know, for me to read the quote. But however, the point was, it's the changes aren't going to be as dramatic as we think. So if that's the starting point, I think you can sit and come up with a schedule that gets it out of the shadow of that Shield, as you said it. It gets it out of the shadow of the NFL. And it's not going to take a whole lot more to do that, because now you're thinking about the American Express, and I'm not saying the American Express goes away. When you hear the PGA Tour, even Brian Rolapp, talking about the schedule and what he wants to see. Yes, it's larger markets, but it's also iconic venues. And I would argue the American Express and what they've created out there is an iconic venue. So maybe it's just a matter of rearranging things. And I think Scottsdale stands on its own. So I don't think you necessarily need to worry about where that stands on the schedule. So now you have 1 or 2 weeks that you want to tinker with to get out of that shadow. It's, again, this is going to sound callous, and we're essentially looking at a board and start marking things off to get to where we want to be. You're a lot closer now than you were before.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And even though the 2027 PGA Tour schedule has not yet been released, that typically is sometime around the Tour Championship in August. The PGA Tour, in a statement yesterday, said that they're still going to be releasing the details, the full details of the 2027 schedule at a later date. One tournament that we do know is already on the books is the American Express. Mm-hmm. It's already reserved its spot on the schedule January 21st through the 24th. If memory serves, that is during the NFL divisional playoffs. What is not yet known, even though we have that date, is whether that's actually going to kick off the PGA Tour season, if that is the new season opener, or does it have the tournament slide in a week prior? One option, of course, would be Torrey Pines, a tournament that was originally title sponsored by Farmers Insurance, which backed out after 2026. Now Century, which has a huge commitment with the PGA Tour through 2035, could have the option of title sponsoring that tournament. So I think potentially you could see, Rex, the PGA Tour season starting at Torrey Pines. Could maybe have Phoenix maybe have Pebble Beach. These are all sort of options. I just go back to what Brian Rolapp said in his vision for the PGA Tour, and particularly starting bigger, starting bolder, wants to start big on the West Coast with an iconic venue. In my opinion, that's not the American Express. You're still up against the NFL playoffs. What would be sort of the answer to that? I think you could make an argument for Torrey Pines. You could certainly make an argument for Pebble Beach. I still think that Phoenix is the best option there, but I'll be very curious to see if a tournament, particularly Torrey Pines, slides in just a week ahead of it. But you're still going to be going up against the NFL divisional round, which is still running counter to everything that Brian Rolapp wants to do.
Well, and here's the problem with this conversation. And I understand it. You understand it. I think anybody with a TV in America that's a fan of sports, just not football, you understand it. It's pretty clear. Like, no one wants to go head-to-head with the NFL. That's not a golf problem. That's an every other sport problem because it's such a behemoth. It just swallows up everything in the room. It's a vacuum cleaner. It's a black hole when it comes to viewership, when it comes to attention, when it comes to advertising dollars, when it comes to media rights deals. We know what this is. And so if you want to stay completely out of that shadow, that's fine, but it's a moving target. We all know the schedule is going to, the NFL schedule is going to expand either next year or the year beyond, whenever the next negotiations come up for a collective bargaining agreement. So now you're cutting off one more week for the PGA Tour. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that we're having this exact same conversation 10 years from now, where they've added yet another event, because all the media rights, all the media companies want is more content, and they're going to continue to pay enormous sums for yet another football game. And if you can get rid of some of the preseason nonsense and go straight into real football, that would be phenomenal for the NFL because they're only going to get more money out of it, and the media partners. Probably not so great for the players because their bodies are only going to get beat up more and more. Completely another conversation. But if you're going to constantly run scared from the NFL, you're going to be doing it essentially for the rest of your career.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be very dangerous. And obviously, no one knows that better than Brian Rolapp and the considerable shadow that the NFL casts. You mentioned the one game potentially being added, making it an 18-game schedule for the NFL. There's also talk about the NFL finishing Super Bowl Sunday on President's Day weekend, which is typically the third week in February. If all of a sudden you are shifting everything on the PGA Tour schedule to try and work around that, all of a sudden you've lost about a month and a half of the PGA Tour season, when again, on the back end of the schedule, you're trying to end the PGA Tour postseason before college football and the NFL starts anew. All of a sudden, it's a really, really condensed window, which I think is also going to have issues with the PGA Tour's best players, just not going to want to play every single week. There have been a couple sort of tweaks, I would say, that the PGA Tour has tried. They have tried to have, remember, the old Farmers Insurance Open end on Saturday during conference championship weekend to avoid a direct conflict on Sunday. You do have the WM Phoenix Open, which has largely leaned into its place up against Super Bowl weekend. The Saturday at the WM Phoenix Open is always bigger than the Sunday, but even on Sunday, they draw pretty good crowds. I don't think that you can necessarily do a Wednesday through Saturday in January, trying to avoid going up against the NFL playoffs on Sunday, because the wild card round, the divisional round, also have Saturday games. Even if you're putting in prime time on the West Coast, you're still going to have a direct conflict. I'm with you. The PGA Tour's vision of starting big and starting bold, starting with a bang, is going to run in direct conflict with what the NFL playoffs, just the schedule itself is a conflict. So I think that's something Brian Rolapp is going to have to figure out. I'm not sure that there's actually an easy answer to that. Some other news that came out, Rex, earlier this week was a report, a good report by our buddy Brody Miller of The Athletic, a New York Times owned company, in which I encourage everyone to go find it on theathletic.com. But among the nuggets in his column was that Bryson DeChambeau and his team reportedly met with various tours at Augusta National to potentially map out a path forward if he does not re-sign with LIV. And again, his contract is up at the end of 2026. How much are you reading into that report and the future that may lie ahead for Bryson?
I mean, I would be surprised if they weren't talking at Augusta with all of the other... yes, Tito just got angry. That's why I tried to mute there for a second. I would be surprised if Bryson DeChambeau's team was not talking with not only the other entities, the other organizations within golf, but specifically the PGA Tour, seeing if maybe they can circle back around and get a second bite of the apple that they offered earlier this year with the returning member program, simply because of the writing on the wall. And again, I think you and I went over this pretty deeply on Sunday's podcast, so I'm not going to rehash it, but I don't think it's the end of LIV Golf. I think there's possibilities out there, and certainly Scott O'Neill is angling in that direction of getting a new investor beyond the public investment fund when Saudi Arabia is done funding the tour at the end of the year. It's no one is going to have the deep pockets that the Saudis have. We know that. And so whatever it is Bryson was going to ask for isn't going to be available. No one's going to be able to pay that. So now Bryson turns his attention to what's next. And he's made it clear that maybe he just walks away from all the tours. Maybe he just becomes a YouTube golfer who plays the major championships. I don't think that's going to be fulfilling for him. I don't see how that sustains him over the long term, because I don't think any professional golfer is wired that way. Maybe Bobby Jones was way back in the day, but I don't think it's realistic to think that I'm only going to play four events a year, and they're going to be the four biggest events on the hardest golf courses against the deepest fields, and have any expectation of being able to compete. So I would be surprised if his management company wasn't trying to already reach out to the PGA Tour and start this conversation. And if you look at the way Brooks did it, he called Tiger Woods. Well, I don't think that's an option right now, because Tiger Woods is busy doing other things at the moment. But you can certainly reach out to Brian Rolapp and a host of other people trying to figure out what could possibly be next. If you take Brian Rolapp at his word, and I was texting back and forth with someone who was on the policy board about this, and he's going to do whatever is best for the PGA Tour. And I think that's code for, yes, he's going to find a pathway back for John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau and Cam Smith if he wants to come back. And if that ruffles some feathers, then so be it. If you take him at his word, I think that's a real possibility for Bryson to get offered the exact same offer that Brooks wrote.
Yeah, I certainly think that's possible as well. And Brian Rolapp was on Pat McAfee's show, I believe that was on Monday, in which he said that, yes, we will react when we have an ability to react. In other words, he said he's going to honor the contracts that LIV golfers have at the moment. John Rahm under contract, Bryson DeChambeau under contract, at least through the end of 2026. I understand why, Rex, this news became a headline and was spread far and wide, is because it relates to Bryson DeChambeau, and it at least gives the appearance that he's pursuing other options. Like, Bryson DeChambeau's management team would be derelict in their duties if they did not explore these other avenues. This is no different than any other player in any other sport who is entering the final year of his contract, putting out feelers, seeing what the potential options could be. His management is just doing what makes sense and what they're employed to do. I think the most interesting thing would be if Bryson DeChambeau was actually involved in those conversations and not just his management team. Here is a player who has factored heavily in each of the past two Masters tournaments. And on the eve of the year's first major, he was talking about his competitive future and what may lie ahead. That's a player who sounds distracted, in my opinion. All right. Sure. On the PGA Tour front, this week is the Zurich Classic, the two-man team competition. We can talk about the future of this event, and we likely will on the Sunday edition, considering it has reduced world ranking points, reduced FedEx Cup points in a new and evolving world. But Rex, some interesting teams to point out this week. Matt Fitzpatrick on the heels of the RBC Heritage victory last week, actually going to be teaming with his brother Alex once again, who is trying to make some headlines on the DP World Tour. One earlier this year, trying to get one of those coveted 10 spots in the Race to Dubai, season-long race in which he could earn a PGA Tour card. Obviously, if he wins this week with his brother at TPC Louisiana, he would have an instant PGA Tour card as well. Brooks Koepka teaming up with Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry teaming up a couple years ago and partnering with Roy McIlroy quite successfully. Brooks Koepka, with the win this week, could get into the signature events for the remainder of 2026. Also, for the fan of the young guns, the young studs, keeping an eye on Blades Brown and Luke Clanton. Blades Brown, who we mentioned, had an opportunity to win at the American Express, has also had a nice season on the KFT, currently sits 10th in those point standings with the top 20 earning PGA Tour cards at the end of the season. What has your attention, if anything, this week at TPC Louisiana?
No, I love the format. I love watching it. I'll pay attention. And I think there are some interesting teams. You pointed out Blades Brown. I think that'll be fascinating to watch how he teams with someone else. And you can really make a year. You can probably make a 2 or 3 year window with a good week this week. We've seen it before. And Brooks is an interesting example now. He's picked a player in Shane Lowry, who is playing well, struggling on Sundays. We can break that down if we wanted to, but he's had opportunities to win on the PGA Tour. He's picked someone who's playing well, which leads me to believe that he realizes the opportunity that this provides as well. He wants to get into the signature events, and he wants to not have to deal with what he's dealing with right now, which is sitting on the porch last week in Hilton Head waiting to get in as the first alternate.
For seven hours.
And never getting in to the event. And this would be a really good way of doing it. So I think all of those are compelling storylines to watch. I think going back to your original question is, we just had a long conversation about Hawaii and the Sony Open and the Century and where they landed on the schedule. And unfortunately, they just made really good targets for what Brian Rolapp wants to do. I would say this event does as well. I don't see how you could possibly have a team event in that tier one of PGA Tour events when, as you pointed out, you're splitting world ranking points. You're splitting official world golf ranking points. You're splitting FedEx Cup points. All of those things. And it's such an important time of year. And to get any kind of traction on the PGA Tour, you can't be depending on a partner. I don't see how you could do it. So I can see it possibly as a second tier event. Even that is a little questionable right now, because I think there's going to be so much focus and so much intensity on guys trying to bounce back and forth between those two tiers. If it comes to pass that Brian Rolapp gets this schedule that he wants, I can see, and you and I both did an interview with our friend from Baton Rouge 2 weeks ago at the Masters. And my point was, I can see New Orleans staying on the schedule because it's a major market and Zurich is a major sponsor, and you have a sponsor, you have a partner that's engaged, and they could do something really special in New Orleans if they were motivated to do so. I do not see it staying as a team event.
I'm with you. I think it most likely reverts back to a 72-hole stroke play competition. Keep in mind, LIV Golf is supposed to head to New Orleans in a couple of weeks as well. If all of a sudden that falls off the schedule, or maybe it doesn't and sticks around, then all of a sudden you have competing events, PGA Tour and LIV, within about 10 miles of each other in New Orleans. Be very curious to see how that potentially shakes out. Also this week, Rex, something we'll be tackling on the Sunday night show is the Chevron Championship, the first major of the year on the LPGA, a new venue this year, but it's going to be familiar to golf fans. Memorial Park in Houston, it quite literally just a couple weeks ago hosted the PGA Tour's Houston Open, won by Gary Woodland. There is a subtle tweak that our viewers will notice. On the 18th hole, the LPGA has added a plunge pool to keep alive the tradition of the winner jumping into quote-unquote Poppy's Pond. This is not going to be played as a hazard. Players who, if they somehow blow it wide right and into this water, will not receive a penalty stroke. Keep in mind, next year, Tom Doak will be redesigning the 18th hole to add an actual water feature. Not sure if players are going to actually want to jump into that, but keep in mind, if you do see it, there's a plunge pool to the right. Absolutely perfect. The players will not be penalized. A couple players to watch. Obviously, Nelly Korda trying to win her third major championship, has played phenomenally well in 2026. Gino Titica, the world number one, dominant world number one, is still looking for her first major championship. Hannah Green looking for win number five as we sit here in mid-April. We'll have a recap on that on the Sunday night show as well. I've seen you, Rex, a little bit gasping for air. You look a little bit sunburned. There's a good reason for that. Earlier today, you were out on the range being fit for some new fairway woods from our friends at Titleist. I have some pictures as well as some video. Please, how did your experience go?
First and foremost, this is Lake Nona, and so there's Jason, and you and I can both agree, like, he's the best in the business, right? I mean, you and I both have been fit by him a few times, and Tina, who of course facilitates all of this and walks us through the products, and this is the driver that we're trying to figure out. And it was a very windy day at Lake Nona, so it was interesting. I will say the conversation kind of centered on you, though. I mean, let's be honest, she was asking like, I guess you canceled your appointment. And she was asking me why, and she said it was, had something to do with Doral, and you were working on a feature for the U.S. Open, which I said that's not the case at all. My friend Ryan Labner has a debilitating case of the yips, and I think both.
Oh,
of them
trust got me, I didn't try to rearrange my schedule in order to make this driver fitting. I saw the ability to go down to Doral. We're doing a JJ Spawn feature, the defending champion of the U.S. Open. It's going to be running during live from U.S. Open week. Very much looking forward to doing that one for Shinnecock. Yes, I am going to be going down to Doral for a few days. And it just so happened to conflict with that driver
fitting
and my debilitating driver yips. And so, yes, I was more than happy to cancel it. Thankfully, Tina on Monday night, God bless her, said, I noticed that you canceled it. Can we reschedule? And so, yes, despite my best wishes, despite my best intentions, I will be on the TPC Sawgrass range trying to figure out my driver yips.
And I will say this, Jason worked with me a lot. Like my driver had gotten kind of high and spinny, and it turns out I picked up a club head speed. I know that's hard for you to believe. I'm working on some new things with the swing. I have picked up some club head speed, but the shaft had gotten a little bit too loose, a little high, a little spinny, a little bit off to the right. Very solid with the new driver. That's not what has me excited. I've never been able to hit a three wood in my entire life. I think the three wood he finally got me in today, I'm excited about getting.
Well, folks, we're going to lay out here so you can watch some of Rex's driver swings. Sure. In their entirety.
Oh boy.
Not a bad motion. This one though, Rex, this one I particularly enjoy, and we need to make sure that the sound is running for this.
Never mind.
Delete that.
I just
No, here's the problem with that. This is a weird conversation. So that's my old three wood. And I was telling Jason, because we're starting the fitting now for the three wood. Keep in mind, I got to that range an hour earlier just because I wanted to hit balls. And so I was probably a little exhausted by this point. I probably spent a little bit too much time. However, I was telling I cannot hit that three wood off the deck, not necessarily off the tee either. Like it just never really worked. And I was trying to explain to him what it's going to do. It always I kind of hit it low and squirts out to the right. And I absolutely striped that one. And I'd hit the one before that well. And at that point, like now I'm just sort of, okay, clearly I'm lying to you. Like I have no idea why I was able to hit it well. It wasn't because it was a bad shot. That was actually because it was a very good shot. You can ask Tina.
Look how downtrodden he is. Look how disappointed he is after spinning around. He knows he toe smothered it. Oh my God. It was just good.
No, I smoked that one.
There's no
way. I actually hit it good. You're completely wrong on this. Had I toe smoked it, I would have been so happy that, you know what? You have her text message. You have her phone number. Text her. Ask her.
Just shuffles off screen. In fact, Tina goes, we'll delete that. Quote, we'll delete that. Nope, she didn't delete it. She said it to me.
That's not what happened. I will admit, I hit some clunkers over the course of that fitting. That was not a clunker. That was good, and that aggravated me because I was trying to explain to him, I can't hit this off the deck.
Luckily for you, you will get your revenge on next week's episode. Again, I have my driver fitting next Thursday, about a week and a half from now, which means I'll be saving all of my horrible yippy swings for the Sunday edition, made for TV edition. So everyone, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of folks
will
be able to watch my swing in its entirety. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of your week. Plenty of golf to keep you guys satiated. Zurich Classic, Chevron Championship, all of which will be recapped on the Sunday edition. If you have any questions that you want us to tackle in the Voices in the Crowd section, make sure to hit it up in the YouTube comment section. Always love pouring through some of those. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.